Astute listeners to the podcast may have picked up that I have been hinting at a special episode with my friend John Silverwood. Coordinating schedules on these podcasts can be difficult, but during the weeks that we were trying to schedule this podcast, SoftBank was going around investing in companies like NVIDIA and purchased Boston Dynamics outright, so I wanted to get in on this game. I was itching to do a podcast about SoftBank for the last month. But finally, my boy John Silverwood came through, and today I present to you Sourcecast Episode 78. We're talking about SoftBank. What a treat. What a treat, listeners. For the first time in like 50 episodes, we actually have guests on Sourcecast. Allow me to introduce the infamous John Silverwood.
Thank you, sir.
I should put in like fake applause and stuff. They'd be like, yeah. John.
All right.
As I've been alluding to for the last 3 or 4 weeks, John and I have been working on a secret podcast. A secret podcast.
Super secret.
About SoftBank. And you may be saying, what is SoftBank? And that is why John Silverwood is on the podcast. So John, what is SoftBank?
SoftBank is a Japanese company started by Masayoshi's son, who is one of the most richest men in Japan. It started back, I believe, in the late 80s. It's kind of funky. Its beginnings are a little bit sparse on the internet. You know, if you go to their Wikipedia page, they really only talk about once they were already a conglomerate. This guy, Masayoshi, he started this on his own when he was much younger, and it was kind of a product of him being a hustler. You know, he was really big into the Silicon Valley right when it started to grow. This guy was really just trying to find any way he could get involved with the technology revolution through microchips or whatever it was.
So you're saying this dude actually went to Silicon Valley in the early 90s and kind of experienced that culture?
Yeah, so it was actually, I mean, it was even before that. This is very, very early. I think even in the late 70s. You know, he went to University of California, Berkeley. You know, he was a comp sci guy. He was just trying to create the next invention and really get his hand on the tech revolution. He ended up selling this device he built, multilingual translator, to Sharp. That was his first big hit. He made like $500,000 on that. And after that, he started just kind of random businesses that came to his mind. I mean, the next business was he was selling Space Invader games. He was importing them from Japan and then leasing them out across Berkeley's campus. So it wasn't like this guy was immediately like a tech mogul in the area. He was kind of just looking to get a foothold. Really, I mean, eventually he goes back to Japan and then he's kind of focusing more on software. At a certain point, he creates this company named SoftBank, and his idea was to buy a bunch of different computer software and set up at like a tech expo and really be like the go-to guy, really kind of just a direct-to-consumer model.
So this guy was a serial entrepreneur.
Right.
Technology was his gimmick in the beginning, but finding commodities, trying to sell them in California to college students, made a little bit of money, worked his way back to Japan, and then started the next phase of his business plan.
And this was actually a disaster. He hired this big stand at a consumer electronics expo, and he gave a bunch of Japan's top software guys free space on it. And it ended up being great for these guys' companies, but not for him. He didn't make like any of his money back. It's kind of funny because apparently it was just total fate that after the fact, this huge electronics distributor in Japan called and said they needed software. I guess they had heard about his expo, and then they were kind of hoping that he would come meet with them. And you know, people talk about this guy being very braggadocious, and you know, he has the swagger even back then. And apparently, he just basically told this guy, "If you want my distribution network, I got to be your only guy." And so, really, he went from having maybe a couple $100,000 in the bank. It was like the next year they were making millions of dollars every month. I think the name of this company was Joshin Denki. It was a big supplier in Japan that really brought SoftBank to life.
Where the hell did this 300-year plan thing come from?
In the middle here, I mean, SoftBank is growing, and once he's got access to all this money, this guy is really just, we mentioned he was a hustler, and he's kind of looking at it as, I need to take a bunch of different investments and hundreds of different things and just see what pans out. Back in 2000, he threw some money at Alibaba, I think to the tune of like $20 million, and that stake became worth $75 billion over however many years. Yeah, this guy's strategy really is just to front load a bunch of investments in technology that he thinks is going to become revolutionary and just see what hits. There's a ton of stuff that didn't hit. Lost $1 billion on Kingston Technologies, stuff like GeoCities. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, I had several awful GeoCities awful websites.
Yeah. Apparently over 600 companies that this guy was throwing money at that may or may not have succeeded.
So what do you think his hit rate is?
That'd be hard to know. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, he could probably be batting like awful, but as long as the big hitters are, come back with that great ROI, he could fail 90 times, and if 10 out of those other times work, he'd be good to go.
Okay, so he's spreading his risk out. He's had a couple of big wins. But let's, again, talk about this 300-year strategy, because I think it's very unusual. What is the 300-year strategy? Kind of, let's level set that.
The 300-year strategy is really about IoT, in my opinion. IoT is kind of not really fringe, but a lot of people don't really think it's serious. You've been talking about those investments that companies have made, like IBM and in sensors when they bought the Weather Channel. And other companies have been making all these moves to acquire little sources of data through measuring devices and things like that. And this guy, he wants to be fully involved in IoT, all kinds of technology. We saw that they bought Boston Dynamics.
They bought Sprint too, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have a minority stake, I think. It may still be a majority stake, but they're talking about reducing their stake to create this merger between T-Mobile, which is interesting. Because a lot of people think that T-Mobile is going to, that's like a guaranteed thing, T-Mobile and Sprint merging. But I don't know if that's the case. I mean, T-Mobile is crushing it right now. Their consumer presence is awesome.
Before, it was Sprint buying T-Mobile. Now it seems like T-Mobile would be in charge. They would be the company that would remain.
I don't know market cap-wise how that would work. And then also, I just think that he made this promise to Trump. We could talk about that a little bit more, too. So part of his plan is, he's going to invest $50 billion plus in the United States. But I don't know how that would work with, if you're merging these two big companies, there's got to be some sort of shedding of jobs in there unless somehow you can spin it. You're not going to be making 50,000 more jobs with that size of a merger, right? I mean,
we've talked about this a lot in the podcast. IBM, HP, all of these companies have been doing mergers and acquisitions and shedding things. It's really all about reducing your workforce. So they're buying telecommunication companies, they're buying robotics companies, there's a focus on Internet of Things. Where do you see this heading? What's the goal, the end goal?
I think you first want to make sure you have a lot of market share. Yeah, they bought Arm Holdings last summer. I mean, that was huge. That was like a $32 billion deal.
So it's the ARM chipset for all the mobile devices. Most phones are using that chipset right now.
So big investments so far have been heavily focused on telecom. Japan Telecom, that was about $3 billion. There's another BB Mobile Corp, like $3.7 billion. Vodafone, that was $17 billion. Sprint Nextel, that was $21 billion. And then I just mentioned, Arm Holdings, that was $32 billion. That was more focused on the chipset. But again, it's really heavily focused on mobile right now, which, I mean, heavily ties into IoT. I mean, you want to be able to control the consumer mobile market and have a great hold there. Speaking of, chipsets, so a lot of people think that there's a possibility for them to go again after another semiconductor company. So it's been really hot the past few years for all these semiconductor companies to consolidate. Hundreds and hundreds of companies that have just dwindled and dwindled because all the big guys are taking the little guys. NVIDIA has been really hot. SoftBank has put some money into them. It was recently reported that they put a small stake into NVIDIA. I personally think that a company like Xilinx, it's been talked about for the past like 2 years that people think it's going to go and it never has. But I mean, they're huge in the FPGA space, field programmable gate array. They invented this stuff and it's a lot more efficient than traditional semiconductors. And really, I think they could make a huge play there, grabbing somebody who has majority market share in this market. And then you pair that with the Arm Holdings acquisition, you're really set up very well for mobile and tying that back into the IoT vision.
Do you think that these companies are going to exist in 300 years, or some variation or some lineage of these companies are going to exist in 300 years? Do you think that they're picking companies that will in some form exist? Or do you think that this is sort of a flash in the pan? It's a gimmick from an investment perspective.
I guess that really depends on value. I mean, some of these big acquisitions, you really got to ask that question because you're dumping a lot of money into it. If you're buying smaller companies or taking these smaller stakes, yeah, maybe something you try doesn't pan out or they may not be around. But to your point, this mobile stuff, it's got to be around in some form or the other. Masayoshi certainly believes that because he's dumping $30 plus billion into some of these companies. Internet of Things, mobile is, you can't pull the two apart. They have to exist, you know, in tandem.
You had mentioned to me in private conversation that this guy likes to throw a lot of money around at companies. He doesn't really negotiate. He swings big.
He tends to buy this stuff at huge premium. So Arm Holdings was bought at a crazy premium. But it's actually genius what he did, though, because what he'll do is he'll pay this high premium. But with his fund, again, going back to this Vision Fund, he'll use that fund to offset some of the cost. Like, he took this Arm Holdings deal, and then he actually offset some of that cost. I think it was like 25% of the cost to the fund. Whereas he still has all control of that. He has the majority control of that company, but he's using the Vision Fund to offset a little bit of his debt load for SoftBank proper, the actual company. You know, going back to your point of the 300-year strategy, raising that fund really gives him so much leverage for years and years that he can just kind of make these moves and then offset whatever cost he can. And then people are still happy. The people who entered this fund are still happy because they have their hands in it as well.
So where do you think the disruption is right now? What kind of companies do you think he's going to buy in the next 12 months? Who's the target?
There's going to be a lot of little guys that go. We saw companies like WeWork he's investing in, a lot of mobile payments. There's an Indian company named Paytm that's been bought, some e-commerce kind of companies, maybe some VR. I also think he's looking to potentially start taking down Uber. You know, he's buying up some smaller companies. There's a Brazilian Uber competitor that he's already invested some money in. And then again, there's a Chinese company that they've been putting a couple different investment rounds in. And so I think that's another space for SoftBank that they're looking to get their hand in.
So in light of his other investments, do you think he's going to try to replicate Uber with the driver model? Or do you think he's going to use his technology and Internet of Things to really have automated drivers on a global basis?
That's interesting. I never thought of that, but I could totally see that. We talked about Travis, the former CEO of Uber, wanting to eventually make that autonomous, but it doesn't seem like they really have the plan for that there. But I could totally see that. He just bought a company that was heavy in Google, Boston Dynamics. So I'm sure there's some members of that team that are probably know the autonomous driving model. So maybe he could pair that into an Uber competitor.
I mean, that's the move to me. Because then you don't have to deal with all of the public relations headaches every time you have a situation where a driver goes rogue. You just got to worry about, you know, the computer crashing, which did happen. You know, Google's self-driving cars had like one minor accident and people were all over it.
Everybody's going to be freaking out about the casualties of the technology. I mean, but eventually it's going to be so much more efficient.
Well, I just saw an article about that, actually. The more self-driving cars that are on the road, because they're all talking to each other and it's sort of an Internet of Things mesh network, it's going to be even safer because there's less variables. I mean, Tesla's in the same spot. Tesla's building the self-driving automation feature into their cars.
Yeah, Tesla's interesting. I mean, this is total speculation, but I wonder if he has any kind of interest in a company like that. But totally tempering that statement by the fact that Tesla is, it's like a total circus show of valuation. You know, a lot of people think that the company shouldn't even exist. I mean, it's worth more than like GM and Ford and companies like that. And everybody finds that absurd.
Yeah, I actually think that's a little bit insane. You know, they don't have a distribution model that can pump cars out like Ford and GM.
It's like a millennial stock in the sense that, you know, everybody wants to be in on the investment, whereas it's not really profitable. And a lot of people think it's just kind of a ticking time bomb. Let's say that Elon Musk can actually find this vision of being a huge power company along with, you know, he's building these battery factories, you know, combination solar, electric, and electric vehicle company. And maybe that would tie into this 300-year vision for SoftBank somehow.
Elon Musk is building an ecosystem. And you have to build an ecosystem when you're building a new kind of car. But he's incentivizing people to put solar panels on your house so you can get energy to charge the cars and do the energy pods and the charging pods. And he's also building structures so you can actually charge them up throughout the country. But that takes a lot of infrastructure. That takes a vision. That takes a 300-year plan.
At some point, there's got to be more acquisitions coming in the U.S. He's promised $50 billion plus, and I'm surprised that we haven't seen anything big yet. I mean, they have up to 5 years to invest this capital, it says. And I think he's going to do a lot of sneaky investments where he doesn't publicly say anything. I mean, if he buys under 5% of a stake of a company, he doesn't have to report it, really.
Yeah, and he's been doing that. Been
he
a
found
lot of
out
reports.
About NVIDIA because it was so heavily covered. It was like, that stock has been going nuts, but I think he's probably going to do that with a lot of these little guys, you know, maybe take a small stake and then he can influence the direction of the company or make some sort of move down the line.
This Vision Fund, I did a little bit of reading about that. Where did that money come from?
There's a connection to Saudi Arabia for sure. I don't even know if we want to talk about this because this is kind of speculative.
So there's definitely going to be some editing here, but we'll say this. It seems like his funding source is not that it's not reputable, but let's say it's probably not the most public relations friendly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of oil money thrown around in here, and maybe they don't list a couple of investors. Well, and you got guys like Apple, Qualcomm, you know, actual legitimate tech companies that are throwing money in, but I mean, it's a lot of Saudi Arabian money. I think India has some money in there too.
So we talked about the guy's 300-year vision. We talked about the history of the company. We talked about the acquisitions that he's made up to this point. We talked about his investment strategy under 5%. But John, I want to know who you think he's going to buy next.
Keep your eye out in the semiconductor area. I really think this company, Xilinx, is a good candidate. Something's got to happen there. Or maybe the 5G space. We saw that crazy battle over, what was it, Straight Path Communications, Verizon and AT&T going crazy over there. So I think 5G, semiconductor, some sort of mobile acquisition. I think there's going to be a big one coming soon because he's been quiet.
So you think T-Mobile might actually go?
Maybe. I think that's the red herring. I think everybody's focusing on T-Mobile and Sprint, whereas he's going to do something out of left field. I just think that's too much money and too much complication with the job thing and, you know, anti-competitive close. You know, you got to close it with the
FCC.
The yeah.
For someone listening to this and is interested in SoftBank, is there a way that they can participate and kind of get in on their good fortunes?
Yes, you can, but I don't know if you'll have the same kind of leverage that somebody like Masayoshi would. You can buy their stock. It's over the counter since it's a, you know, Japanese company. But again, they're a big company. They're $88 billion. So you'd be looking for 20 plus years down the line for that return. You know, look at the high margin companies that are in some of these areas like the semiconductor space or these random IoT companies. You know, because some of these little guys, if they have a great margin, they can snap them up right away because it's instantly accretive. I would keep your eyes on those guys. See if there's any rumors out there.
John Silverwood, you're on point.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining. We fulfilled the prophecy.
Finally.
Finally.
You've been harassing me for weeks.
Well, now it only takes 6 months for us to come up with our next topic that we can do a podcast together on.
Thanks.
Take care.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Sportscast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.